We're taking you behind the scenes with entrepreneurs that run product-based businesses. There is so much information out there tailored towards service providers, so we have carved out a space just for you. The creative entrepreneurs making and selling physical goods. We're firm believers that everyone has a story to share, and there is so much we can learn from each other's business journey. Whether you are just starting out or a seasoned business owner, this podcast will shed light on new strategies, inspiration, and action steps to help you grow your product-based business. Hey friends, thanks for tuning in. I'm Katie Hunt and welcome to Proof to Product. Today on the podcast, we are talking about adding licensing as an additional revenue stream for your business. Most seasoned product-based business owners have multiple arms of their business. This means that they sell to multiple revenue streams. They may be selling wholesale, retail, licensing their art. They may have a brick and mortar shop or offering drop shipping. There are lots of ways to build a profitable, sustainable business. And today we're putting a spotlight on how to license your art. My guest today is Stacey Bloomfield, who has been creating artwork for brands and products since 2009. Stacey's brand Gingerbur has sold products to more than 800 stores. She has licensing deals with major brands, and in 2020, she began educating the creative community about licensing through her course called Leverage Your Art. In 2020, she also published her first book. So much great stuff here. On today's episode, Stacey is sharing how she landed her first licensing project, tips for negotiating licensing contracts, and the importance of remaining resilient when you're pitching yourself. And this goes for wholesale as well as licensing. Before we get started, I wanted to let you know what's up and coming inside of Proof to Product Labs. We have some incredible trainings lined up for you. We're talking about paid Pinterest ads, how to pitch yourself to the press, and we're going to talk about how to make your website inclusive, diverse, and accessible so that you can serve a wider audience. If you'd like to join us for any of these live trainings, head to proof2product.com/labs to enroll in my 12-month group coaching program. If you have any questions about whether this program is right for you, send me a DM on Instagram. I'm at proof2product. All right, let's jump into today's episode with Stacey Bloomfield. Hi, Stacey. Welcome to Proof to Product.
Hi, Katie. I'm so glad to be here. Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I want to recap for our audience here. You have had such success in your business, and I give you major kudos and applause for this. Gingerbur products are sold in over 800 stores. You have licensing deals with major brands. You've written a book called Give Yourself Margin, and you have educational programs for artists that want to generate income from their art. You know, when you started out in 2009, did you envision this business becoming what it is today?
No, not at all. Honestly, I had no vision when I first started, other than my husband thinking, your art's really cute, Stacey. Have you thought about selling it online? And at the time, my husband was a graduate student, and thinking about my career was the furthest thing on my mind. It was like, get my husband Nathan through graduate school, and then Stacey's going to think about her career. So it was really wonderful.
That is so funny. My husband and I used to have a joke when I had my stationery brand that, like, I had a corporate job at the time too. So I had the overlap, and we would joke just at night when we sleeved cards, we just got to sell a million cards and then I can leave my day job or whatever it was. And, you know, honestly, that wasn't even a benchmark that was tied to any financial security or anything. It was just this like pie in the sky, a million cards, you know, but what does that mean anyhow? So it's funny to hear you say you didn't have this vision for it. You just wanted to like figure out what you were doing. So was the first thing product or was the first thing licensing? What did you start with?
First thing was product on Etsy. So selling nursery art. I kind of accidentally positioned myself as a nursery decor artist because I was making nursery art for my own kiddos because my husband was in graduate school and we didn't have a big budget at all. So I was making my own art. And a few blogs, I guess, saw me on Etsy eventually. I was on Etsy for like a year and a half before I had real traction at all. And when I say traction, it was like, I sold something this week. Woo! You know, it was yeah. It was definitely part-time in the most real sense. And yeah, nursery art, blogs picked me up as a nursery decor artist. So for a long time, I like kept myself as a nursery decor artist, especially in the first like 3 to 4 years. I was like, I have to be a nursery artist because that's what people think I am. And my first big licensing deal came about 3 years into selling on Etsy. And that was with Crate and Kids, which was called The Land of Nod. back in the day, which was awesome.
So let's talk about that. So your first licensing deal was with Land of Nod. I'm sorry, now Creighton Kids. Was this something that you sought out or did the company find you?
Okay, I sought them out. And I'll be the first to tell you that a lot of my story kind of blurs together because I have a lot of different revenue streams from my business. And I was the type of person that when someone would convo me on Etsy and be like, do you sell wholesale? I'd be like, yeah, wholesale. And I didn't know what wholesale was. So I figured out how to wholesale. And then right. Someone's like, do you license? And I'm like, sure, I can license my art. So what had happened is I had hired a wholesale coach named Grace, who runs Pink Olive in New York. She's a great retailer and we're friends now. She was like one of the first retailers who ever reached out to me. And she challenged me to make like a list of like my dream clients to work with. And Land of Nod was on that list. And then I was randomly listening to a podcast where Michelle, who was the creative director at the time, was talking, and she gave out her email address during that podcast episode because the question was, how do you find artists? And she goes, I'm always open to artists emailing me. So I like paused the podcast right then and wrote down the email address. And I sent my first pitch email to her directly. And within 2 weeks, she'd written back and was like, yes, we'd love to work together. And I thought that's how it worked. I thought you just ask for what you want and then you get it. And for a while, that's kind of how I operated. So that's how I got into licensing.
I love that story. Like the blind optimism of course, I'm just going to email this person. And of course, this will work out. I love that because honestly, that's me in the early days of my business too. I didn't have these what if this fails idea. It was just like, well, let's email and see. Like, what's the worst that could happen, you know?
Absolutely. There's this scene in Gilmore Girls about one of the students who goes to Broadway and he comes back and he says, they wrote in the New York Times that I'm winningly naive. And so sometimes in my head, I just imagine that I'm that person, or I was that person. Now my eyes have been opened a little bit, but that's how I lived and operated in my career, especially in the early years.
Well, you're willing to take risks. Right? Because you haven't really been knocked down yet. And that's not to say, like, I've been knocked down quite a bit in my business in different ways, but we get ourselves back up and we try again. And that's how you end up with a business that is successful and with multiple revenue streams in 10 years, you know?
Oh, yeah. And also, I'll say this, like, I think there are a lot of times when I did get knocked down or get rejection. I know it. I mean, it's happened a lot, but I just kind of have retrained my brain to know that, like, when I get a no, that just means someone else might be waiting for me to ask them and maybe I'll get a yes from them. So it's kind of this resiliency that I kind of didn't recognize at the time. I think it's just how I operate. I'm kind of a fighter, I guess you could say. Like, and I didn't like put the word resiliency to it until a couple of years later, because that's something people have asked me a lot in terms of like, I mean, you know, with wholesale and with art licensing, a lot of it is putting yourself out there, pitching your work. A lot of times you get no response. You get maybe we like your work, but not right now. Sometimes you're just left wondering and it could feel very deeply personal. And sometimes people are total jerks. Don't get me wrong. I've gotten a lot of mean responses. You just learn how to keep pitching and how to keep going. It's a numbers game, right? You just keep going and eventually I think something works.
Totally. And thank you for saying that, because I think there is a lot of, yes, we can be resilient. Yes, we can pick ourselves back up again. And we all need to learn how to do that. But it is hard at times when you send all these pitches out and you put yourself out there and you don't hear a response, or you hear a negative response, or just even a not right now, I always like to hear, because at least you know where that they saw it and that.
Oh, yeah.
No. So thank you for sharing that. Okay. For our listeners that are interested in getting involved in licensing, what should artists be preparing before they even consider pitching for different projects? Like, what's their first step?
Okay. So the first thing that you need to have developed is a signature style, knowing the kind of creative work that you do. And so as someone who also designs wholesale for the greeting card industry and product-based, you know, it's that same idea. Like, you're building a brand that's distinctive and that lets your own voice kind of shine through. Like, you don't want to try to just emulate Rifle Paper Company, right? You want to have a voice that is completely your own. Even if it does follow trends, you know, it needs to stand out. So I think the same goes for building a wholesale brand or a product-based brand as goes with art licensing. You need a style that stands out a little bit, because until you have that, you can't with confidence approach companies and show them your work and be like, hey, work with me. Because truly, what are you bringing to the table that someone else doesn't bring? So I always recommend building, you know, you hear the word portfolio a lot, right? Portfolio of work, but really it's just your body of work. You want to have it all together, probably in a PDF or on a website, so that you can just really easily send your work to a potential client or a potential licensing partner and be like, hey, this is what I do. Here's why I do it. Here's why I'd be a really good fit for you. Would you like to work together? It's really that.
I love that. And I love too how we talk about portfolios, and I think that the word portfolio and the idea of a portfolio, it really intimidates a lot of people. They think it needs to be a certain way and a certain format and all of this. But to your point, it could be as simple as sending them to your website to see the collection of items you've already designed. It could be sending them to your Instagram if you're using that as a digital platform that you're sharing your different art, just so long as it's cohesive and the aesthetic is strong and different than the rest. Yeah.
Here's the truth. I think that people think there are all these rules they have to follow in order to be successful as a creative entrepreneur. But when I designed for the Land of Nod and I sent them that email, do you know what my portfolio was? I made a photo collage, literally, and inserted it into the body of my email. That it was like literally just, here's my favorite work I want to show you. And at the time I had an Etsy store. And that's it. And I didn't have repeat patterns. So a lot of times when people think of art licensing, they're thinking of like surface pattern design, which is great. I do that now. But when I was first starting out, I was just an illustrator. I illustrated animals on white backgrounds. I had no hand lettering style. In fact, when I tried to start doing greeting cards, it was a real like mind breaker for me to figure out how to marry my images with words. And that can really be a block for a lot of people. So my point is, there is probably a place for you to be able to be both like a product-based business and take some of that artwork that you've already created for products and license it to a company to create more revenue from the work you've already made. And that's kind of how I approached my art licensing. It's like, well, I'm already designing all this stuff, but I can't make bedding, but Land of Nod can. So maybe we can work together. And that's what I did. And that's how I've honestly approached all aspects of my business. I try to like squeeze as much out of a piece of artwork as possible. Like I'm wringing out like a wet towel and I'm like, what else can I get out of this?
I love it.
That's what I do.
That's awesome. You know, you started to talk about some of the pros and cons of licensing as you were describing that, you know, let's talk through that. What are the pros and cons of licensing your art?
Okay. So here's the biggest pro is that whenever you're licensing your artwork, you're taking artwork that you've already created and you're turning it into a bit of recurring revenue for you. So I still get royalty checks from a partnership that I've had for, you know, 6 years. You know, granted, there have been some years where I get bigger checks than others, but I get these monthly checks from them. There's another company I did a coloring book with, and I get quarterly checks from them. Again, some partnerships like are going to be a lot more condensed. Let's say there's a company that wants to license one design for one collection. You might get a one-time payment from them and that's okay. But for other clients, it can turn into a long-term relationship. And some SKUs have been sold, like I said, for 6 years with some companies. And so that's just money that is like just coming in. And I'm like, ooh, happy check. So that's a big pro about it. Another pro is brand recognition and credibility. It really builds a lot of credibility. I remember I think it was the second National Stationery Show that I went to, and someone came and was asking me for a hammer or something. And they were like, what's your brand? And I said, Gingerbread. And just that week in New York, my line with Land of Nod debuted at like an in-person show. And they were like, oh my gosh, you're a Gingerbread? And I was a very small business at the time. Don't get me wrong. But like all of a sudden they were like, you're Gingerbread. Oh my gosh. I just saw your work with Land of Nod. And I got to tell you, not only does it make you feel really good just to hear that, but of it course. Does. It just boosts your brand recognition. So the more partnerships that you can find, the best. Oh, and here's a pro tip. Always make sure that when you get a licensing deal, make sure that they like brand it with your name if you can. A lot of licensing deals will be where you're just licensing your artwork and your name's never mentioned. So I always try at this point to make sure that it's like Gingerbread for Creighton Kids or Gingerbread for Page Tate and Company or whoever, Gingerbread for Moda Fabrics. That I do lots of fabric design. So like those are big pros. The cons are you have to get used to just like with creating product, like making new work and pitching it, because it really is up to you to share your new work with art directors and to build relationships. But the nice thing is all of these industries are similar in the fact that it's a relationship building exercise. And I think that once you really approach every transaction as not a transaction, but as an opportunity to build trust and relationship, not only do you find the right people who want to sell your products or have you design something for them, but it just makes it so much better. Let's say this, you know, for any of us, let's say you're in stationery and you've wanted to work with a specific retailer. And let's say you get a no, like, let's say you pitch to like your dream retail client, either for product base or for licensing, and they just tell you no. That makes you scared sometimes. And that makes you forget that there's a person on the other side of that screen. But the truth is, they're just like you running a business, trying to find the right partnerships or the right products that they can sell. I know I'm rambling, but all this is important. As designers of product, you already are clued into the idea that you have to make stuff that sells. Like, you can love to draw, you can put all sorts of passion into your work and share it on social media, but is it going to sell? So if you take that same mindset with your artwork for art licensing, it will make you so much more successful. I see so many illustrators who are just passionate about illustration, you know, and they have beautiful feeds on their social media platforms, but are they making the artwork that's going to make it really easy for someone to say, yes, let's work together? So those are some tips right there.
I loved it. You weren't rambling at all. It's funny. I was like, oh, she's touching on a few questions I still have coming for her. This is good. But no, I was talking with somebody earlier today for the podcast, and we were talking about there's so many things that many people are doing in their business that don't really lead to sales. They don't really lead to the relationship. They don't really lead to things that will help the business successfully scale. And so you're absolutely right about all of the points that you made. And thank you for laying out the pros and cons so gracefully. What is the, we talked about the prepping and getting that portfolio, building your body of work, right? But like, what is the best way to get in front of licensing partners? Can you walk us through what that, you shared your process of pitching in the early days. Has that process changed? How are you finding the right people to pitch and then going about pitching them?
Well, I will tell you, my process is super similar, honestly. The number one question I get whenever I am helping artists learn to like successfully pitch their work, everyone has the same question. How do I find the email address of an art director? And that is, the truth is, there is no one way to do it. I will tell you that a simple way to do it is to get on LinkedIn, maybe try out that free LinkedIn upgrade premium for a little bit, and send a message to the company that you're looking to work with. And ask them who to direct your work to. Don't pitch in LinkedIn, okay, guys? So like never, ever, ever send a pitch directly in LinkedIn. I just signed a licensing contract and I can't announce the name of it, but I've been pursuing this company for 3 years. They've gone through several different art directors and I found my first contact by doing a LinkedIn premium and searching through, and they have a bunch of people who work for them, and trying to find the person who might have the right title, because not everyone's called art director. Some people are called head of product development. Some people are called like licensed artist managers, depending on who you're working with. And I found them and I sent a very simple, polite DM. And I said, who could I direct my inquiry to if I wanted to submit for art licensing? And they told me and sent an email. And it's been 3 years and I just got an art licensing contract, because it's a long game, my friend. Sometimes it's quick, but sometimes it's long. Another good way to do it, and I know this, it's the same approach. So again, don't pitch in direct messages ever on social media.
Never.
People. Just don't do it. Unless you have if you have like a friendly relationship with someone, like your actual friends, you can like ask them a question. But like, if this is like a cold call, like get on Instagram, find the company, and again, be like, who can I direct my inquiry to? I mean, there's someone who's on the other side of that, and they probably know who to talk to. A lot of greeting card companies and fabric companies, they actually have submission guidelines on their website. So you just follow them. And the other way, which right now is on pause for so many of us, are trade shows. We right now with things, it's not really happening like it did, but there are art licensing trade shows that actually happen at the same time as stationery shows. So my secret sauce used to be that I would come to the National Stationery Show prepared to pitch my licensing work as well, because at the exact same time, there was either the Blueprint Art Licensing Show, or there was a field trip with a smaller show, or Surtex. And all these art directors have been, if they're in New York already, they're walking the shows. And so I would have my whole booth set up for stationery wholesale. And then I would have these little separate pitch decks that I would have printed and put together. And I would actually invite people to come to my booth so we could talk more about licensing. And like, again, it's that idea of squeezing everything I can out of these opportunities. And how often are you in the same place with all these different people? So take advantage of it. It takes a little bit of prep work. All of this takes prep work, but it pays off. And I'm trying to think if there are any other ways to get in front of people. honestly, I had one licensing deal happen that, okay, have you ever had this thing happen where you're on social media and you're talking about a goal that you have? So I think a few years ago, I was talking on Instagram stories and I said, my big goal is to do a coloring book this year. And I'm talking like 10 minutes later, I had an email in my inbox from someone who had sent, I think, a coloring book company my post and said, this artist for this thing could be great. And they were like, want to make a coloring book together. Putting your goals out there into the world, I can't tell you how many times I've seen things happen because I share about them, and not in like a desperate way. It's just like, this is what I dream of doing. Not like, oh my gosh, please, I need some money right now. Will someone hire me? Like, it's a different energy.
It's a different energy. It's a different tone. It's a different message. I wholeheartedly agree with you.
I just really, I don't know if you can tell, but I'm fairly transparent about what's going on in my work life. And I just feel like I share from an authentic place about like what my goals and dreams are, because I think in the earlier days of social media, especially when it felt like people had to be completely polished, you know what I mean? And not show their cards. Like, that was confusing to me as someone who was trying to grow my business. Cause I'm like, how do things happen for people? And so I share about like those things on social media, and I think it encourages the community. So there you go.
Oh, absolutely. I think the transparency of what you're working towards can only help you, you know, putting out there that you want to do a coloring book or whatever it is that people are striving to do, that's going to bring in opportunity that you didn't even know existed. I may see it and recommend somebody else, or you never know who's going to see these things. I think that's a great story.
When it comes to scaling a product-based business, one of the biggest mistakes I see people make is that they spread themselves too thin. They're trying to sell retail in their online shop. Maybe they're doing retail craft shows. They're dabbling in wholesale. Maybe they're picking up custom jobs on the side and trying out licensing. But when you do all of these different things or a combination of them, you're spreading yourself too thin. Because each of these sales channels require different sales strategies, marketing strategies, and you're catering to a different audience, a different customer. So the first thing I want to tell you to do is stop spreading yourself too thin. Instead, build systematically. Do one thing, get it going really well, and then add another sales channel. And two, if you're considering whether wholesale is the right next step for your business, I invite you to join me for my free masterclass. It's called Is Wholesale Right for You? And it's available at proofedproduct.com/wholesale class. This is on demand. You can watch it anytime, and it's about 30 minutes long. And during this training, I'm going to run you through concrete things that you need to have ready before you start wholesaling. Again, sign up at proofedproduct.com/wholesale class. I look forward to seeing you there. The negotiating piece of licensing deals is often intimidating for people. How can artists put their best foot forward when they're negotiating licensing deals? You already mentioned making sure it's co-branded. What other things do you want to advise them on?
Well, I think that's what's different, especially if you're a product-based business who's selling like wholesale. You're not really having to do a lot of contract work. You know, it's like purchase orders and fulfillment. So almost always, whenever someone wants to move forward with a licensing deal, they will send a contract to me. And contracts are very long. Some can be short, some can be incredibly long and overwhelming. So don't be afraid to, and I know spending money feels scary on these things, but you can hire, if lawyers are too expensive, there are actual art licensing coaches that you can hire to read over contracts. Jennifer Nelson is an art agent who we haven't even talked about agents, and we might touch on that. I don't have an agent. But Jennifer Nelson is an art agent who on her website offers like contract reading, and you know, you pay her a fee and she reads it and tells you what to look for. And she has gotten me, I almost signed it would have been a really bad deal for me contract, but at the time I didn't know what to look for. This was early in my licensing career.
Right.
And I was hesitant. So I'm so thankful that I hired her. I think I spent, her rate is different now, but you know, at the time I spent maybe $100 for her to read this contract, and it was so worth it. So you might have to spend a little bit of money. Lawyers can get really expensive, but like start with Jennifer Nelson, start with asking colleagues who they work. The lawyer I work with right now was recommended through another stationery designer who got into art licensing. And I work with a really great lawyer based out of Atlanta for my contract work. But the things to look for in a contract, if you're just on your own looking at it, is one, when do you get paid and how do you get paid? So let's say you're a stationery designer and a larger stationery company wants to license a piece of art from you for their upcoming collection. And I've done that before. Usually they're going to pay a flat fee because we're talking the smaller the retail cost of an item, you know what I mean? That if you're going to go royalty based, let's say it's a 10% royalty, 10% off a $4.50 card isn't a lot of money. And they're probably going to do a run, maybe a maximum of 2,000 cards. So a lot of times, instead of keeping track of royalties for low volume items, these companies who are making the cards, like, they'd rather just do a flat fee at the beginning and be like, we're just going to pay you a flat fee no matter what sells, and then we'll be done with it. A lot of times these transactions are like one and done. They've licensed this card. Maybe we'll work together again. Maybe not. Other times, like my experience with like fabric design and with doing work with Creighton Kids, it's a royalty base. So you don't get paid until after the product sells. So you're going to have a longer lead time. So let's say I design a product or they license something in January, but it's not going to be hitting retail stores until 9 to 12 months later, maybe 18 months, depending on things. You don't get paid until then. So you have to prepare for that. And then you get paid whatever their terms are, quarterly or monthly. It's all in your contract. You look for that for the life of the product being sold. Something to look for is to make sure that you still retain the rights to all of your artwork. So you have a choice. It is a choice. Some people want to buy your artwork outright. And when they mean buy it outright, they want to like buy the copyright from you so that that artwork is no longer yours to use on anything. And you have to make sure that, I mean, some people do that. It's money and some people need to do that. But if you want this artwork to keep making money for you in other industries, you don't want to sell your copyright. So for me, let's say I've licensed a sheet. I have this one really popular sheet that I've licensed on everything sold and it's been ripped off from here to China. It's super cute. So at one point I was licensing that same sheet onto baby bedding. I was licensing it onto children's clothing. I licensed it onto a greeting card. I licensed it onto yardage for fabric. And then I had my own gingerbread products that I was selling with that sheet. And that's totally all fine because those are different categories. And you just make sure in your contract that you are not licensing like the same product category at the same time, because that'll get you in trouble. So make sure you are not selling the rights to your artwork. Make sure it's just a license. And once they're done using it, you get to use it again for that category. And make sure that when you're licensing artwork to other industries at the same time, that you're not accidentally like, oops, I just messed up this relationship with this one client because I didn't keep track of where I was licensing it. Because again, it's relationships.
Everything business is relationships. Totally. That was very informative. Thank you for sharing that. For the flat rate designs you're doing for like one-off products, stationery, do you mind sharing a range of rates for the flat fees for that kind of stuff?
Totally. And this is the range depending on who you're working with. I've seen as low as $250 and as high as $1,000. You have to remember that just because a company is a large company doesn't mean they're going to pay better than a smaller company. It's funny. I have worked with so many companies, like dozens and dozens, just for art licensing. And you'll find that the really big names sometimes that you want to work with have the worst rates ever. And I won't get into specific names, but you know, some places you almost look at as like loss leaders because it is a reputation builder. Like, you know, there's some companies you might want to license with because it's like the like, wow, you worked with this company. That looks really nice. And you can totally use that to help you sell more product and get more licensing deals. But you just have to decide what that is for you.
Right. What you're trying to get out of the deal.
Yeah. I have found that the smaller companies actually that you're more likely to be talking to the person who's making the licensing deal, give you the better sometimes licensing agreements than maybe the companies that have like a lawyer on staff who they have a standard contract. And also, it's okay to ask questions about contracts and to go back even with those companies that are larger that have big names. It's totally okay to go back and ask for adjustments. I've had to do that.
I'm so glad you said that because I think, and I've seen this on the wholesale side too, when big box stores come and want to purchase, like the smaller brands sometimes they feel a little stuck because it's something new to them and they feel like maybe sometimes they feel like they can't negotiate or they can't ask for what they want. They feel like this is just what the offer is and they have to accept it. And I just really want to emphasize to our listeners here that everything is negotiable and you can always, always ask for different terms in a contract, whether that's payment terms or royalty rates or whatever it is. They may say no, they may say yes, but everything is negotiable.
I will tell you that I have had to walk away, not like with a bad, not because anything bad happened, but sometimes you just have to walk away from potential deals just because they're not the right deal for you. And that's okay. And you know, it can be heartbreaking because sometimes you're not even pitching. Sometimes if you're sharing your work on social media and you're kind of building your brand, you don't even have to have like tens of thousands of followers. Let's just say you're building a really tidy, cohesive brand. People are looking on social media for that. And sometimes you'll get a message where it's like, I'd love to work with you. And you think, my time has finally come. It's happening. And then you're afraid whenever you get the actual contract, you're like, oh no, if I turn this down, everything I've ever wanted isn't going to happen. But there's more than one way forward. And I'm a firm believer that just because it doesn't happen exactly the way you envisioned it happening, doesn't mean you're not going to have these big, amazing dreams come true. And it's a real like mind freeing idea when you realize like, you know what, there's more than one way forward. And I will tell you with my own business growth, gosh, the way I thought I was going to achieve like financial security is not how it has happened. It has been just like evolving for 12 years. And not to like jump ahead, but I during like 2020 had to adjust my business model quite a bit because wholesale, it still is a big, huge part of my business. But, you know, we went to the January trade shows at the beginning of 2020. Majority of those purchase orders got canceled because of the things that happened with the virus with COVID-19. And all of a sudden I was looking at like Q2 and I was like, how am I going to fill in this gap? And so I actually got real scrappy and decided to launch an online course to teach people how to use what's right in front of them, their own skills, and how to leverage it into income with an art licensing starting point, and then seeing all the different ways you can take that artwork and make money with it as a creative. And it kind of revolutionized my business. And I did not go into 2020 thinking this is exactly what I'm going to do. But now that's a huge part of what I do.
I'm sure it's a big part in terms of the revenue and income, but it's also an impact thing, right? Like, you know, you're impacting and helping so many people do more of this work. And also too, like, and I know I've experienced this with Paper Camp and our community over the last 10 years, when we have these open conversations, these transparent conversations about how these deals work and how we're negotiating different things, that strengthens the entire industry. That transparency allows everyone to put their best foot forward when they're negotiating things like pricing or terms or whatever it might be. And so you are making a huge impact, but you didn't see it coming, which I love to hear.
Well, I will tell you, to your point, one of the biggest struggles with art licensing among like new artists. And when I say art licensing, I want to just clarify, you can draw or make art digitally. You can do painting. You can do hand illustration. You can do hand lettering as a licensed artist. You can do beautiful abstracts. You can do character work. Art licensing means that you can, anything that you, is a product that could have something printed on it, you can license that. So just to clarify, like, you can be a creative coming at it from so many different points of views and create a revenue stream with art licensing. But one of the hardest things I see with newer artists who want to license is that they do it for like so cheap because they are desperately wanting the work. And so it undercuts the whole community. And it's honestly usually because there's not a lot of transparency with pricing. And that is something that I think a lot of the leaders kind of in our creative industry, both with wholesale, like things that you're doing, and what I'm trying to do is to demystify a lot of things, because we will have power as a creative community to ask for more. And a lot of companies, you know, rely on licensed artists to sell their products, but can they sell a blank bag as easily as they can sell a bag with like a beautiful illustration on it? Like, we are an asset. You just have to remember that. Don't sell yourself short. And the same thing happens with product, you know, like you go on Etsy and you see like art prints selling for like $2. I think it's a kind of a rookie mistake I see a lot. So we just have to talk about it and encourage people to, you know, ask for what is fair.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Thinking back to your business journey over the last 12 years, what is something you wish you had known before you started licensing your artwork?
You know, I was very much not organized. So I think a lot of creatives can relate to this idea. Like, we don't necessarily have systems that we have built for being able to be successful. Like, I've hired employees now to help me with this, but I'm still the type that if I get a piece of mail, I throw it in a shoebox sometimes. And then sometimes I'll come back and look at it. So now I have now I have a team of people who help keep me honest and organized. But in the early days, like, I wasn't keeping track of contacts. I wasn't building a newsletter. I was kind of just flying by the seat of my pants and doing what feels good. And sometimes that really, really works. But like, I have a lot of missed opportunities in hindsight, I think, where if I had just kept a better handle on like organizing my inbox, organizing my artwork, and kind of had a schedule or a rhythm to like the seasons of how I ran my business, I could have like alleviated a lot of stress for myself and had like quicker, I guess, financial returns. And maybe not everyone feels that way, but like I am definitely that scattered, messy artist. And I had to really learn how to become a businesswoman with systems that worked for me, that allowed me to like, oh, it's time to pitch to this person again. It's been 6 months since I've emailed them. Now I'm on a pitch schedule. So I have contacts now that I have built with art licensing, and I keep track of whenever I have emailed them, and I have an alert set up to remind me when it's time to send them my new work. So now I teach all of my students about this process. Whenever, let's say you're going to pitch 3 times a year, you're going to take a week before it's time to really get into your pitch cycle, and you're going to tidy up your work and put all your new work together and update it. And then you're going to take the next week to send out your pitch emails. And they're not cookie cutter, one size fits all. I personalize those emails because these are people that I've talked to. I'm not going to show everyone all the same work if it's not right for their industry. I'm not going to show nursery decor to a company that is focused on, I don't know, let's say it's cookbooks. I don't know. You know, I'm not going to show them the same things.
Of course.
You know, I just think taking the time to slow down and get organized at the very beginning and create some systems will serve you so well as you go, because otherwise, learn from me. I was like 10 years in and I finally decided to buckle down, not 10 years, I guess more like 9 or 8 years. And I finally like brought in like an accountant to help me get organized with some things and brought in an assistant. And I had to like pull the curtain back and be like, here's how messy everything is.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're like, we can fix this, but oh my gosh, there's a lot to fix.
Oh, that's so funny. Same thing. Systems and processes, I love them. I see the value in them. And it's definitely something that I think a lot of creative entrepreneurs struggle with, because like you said, they want to create, they're used to just doing things in their own way on their own schedule. And so I have a client who, she tried Asana, she didn't like it. She tried Trello, she didn't like it. She's now working in ClickUp and loves it. Like for some reason that works with her brain and her work style. So I will encourage our listeners, like, systems and processes can take time. Give yourself some room to test different things out to find what you're looking for. Which, may I ask, which systems you're working or tech systems you're using?
For my entire team, we use Slack because we have a lot of different arms of our business. So we still have our website, gingerbread.com. We do wholesale, like we're in 800 stores. We have the education arm of our business. We also had a retail store, but right now with COVID, it's closed. And it's the best for everybody right now. And then like with other special projects, I've been using Asana. It's everything's different. You just have to take time to get used to the learning curve. But I think slowing down and creating the systems will just help you, because now when we need to add a new team member in, it's so much easier for them to slide in, and we have all of these things organized. We rely heavily on Dropbox. We've organized that to suit our business needs. And, you know, now I'm to the point to where I used to have to do everything myself. I used to lay out the catalogs myself. I used to take the product photos. I used to pitch my emails, you know, and you slowly add people in to your team. And I think my first hire was like even 5 hours a week. It was someone to help me like with some shipping. And you just keep adding people in to make your life easier so that you can be in like your zone of genius, you know, which sounds a little cheesy, but like you want to operate in a place that your biggest strengths lie. And you want to bring in employees who can do jobs better than you could do yourself, right?
Yes.
And it's scary, but like everyone who I add to my team now, I literally tell them like, my goal is for you to make this better than I can make it, because I'm best if I can create content for teaching. And I'm the only one who can get inside my own head and teach about my experiences. And I'm also still the only illustrator. So I do all the artwork.
That's amazing. Well, thank you for sharing that with us. Okay. So if people want to learn more about your educational programming, they want to buy your book, check out your products, your license, all the things that you have built, which are amazing, where can they find you online?
Okay. So my company name is called Gingerbur. So Gingerbur is my stationery and home decor company that I've had for 12 years. So if you go there on Instagram or just gingerbur.com, you can find everything. And then Leverage Your Art is the education website. And we are rebuilding that website right now. And I'm hoping to have it launched by the summer. So Leverage Your Art is where you can learn about my 8-week course where I teach people how to not only license their art, but turn it into a multiple revenue stream machine. Because the truth is, there's not an art licensed artist who is only licensing their art to make their living. It is literally a revenue stream. You have to have multiple revenue streams. A lot of people are not only wholesaling. Oh, they do sell on their website. They do shows, you know, they teach. There's so many ways forward. So that course opens up for enrollment the second week of June, and it runs for 8 weeks. So you can join the wait list. I also have a monthly membership if you want just some accountability and some guided help with growing your licensed art and creative revenue stream businesses. And that's called the Creative Powerhouse Society. And that reopens in August for enrollment. And you can join the wait list. And yeah, that's where you can find all my things. Oh, my book is called Give Yourself Margin. Okay, this is the last story I'll tell. And it's one of those beautiful kismet moments because, okay, here's what happened. A few years ago, I was really burnt out on work. I think this was 2017. And I had not created the systems. Remember, I said it was like 3 or 4 years where I really took the time to create systems. Well, I hadn't done that yet. And I was doing way too much work and not trusting my team. And I was like, you know, in Dumb and Dumber, where there's like the bird that like the kid is like squeezing and he pets it and like the bird's head pops off. You know what I mean? I felt like that's what I had done to my business. It was like, I loved it so much that I was killing it. Like I was giving it too much attention, like to the point of smothering my business. And it was like, I had blocked all the good energy, I felt like. Anywho, that year was so rough for me. The next year I was like, I have to give myself a break. So I drew this illustration that said, give yourself margin. And it was like a hand holding, like kind of pinching like a little bit of space. And I decided it was my mantra for the year. I'd never done that before. So I drew it and I pinned it on my wall. And I was like, I'm just going to give myself some space to refigure out what I'm doing and why I'm doing it. And I started going to therapy that year and I started taking better care of myself. I have some autoimmune disorders and I took time off work, which I never did. And I hired more people, which felt scary because it's like, how can I do that? I need the money for my family. But I started empowering my team to like really thrive in their roles. And I slowly kind of just opened my hands up and released all of this stress. So prior to that year, I'd been trying to get a book deal and I'd pitched to everybody and everyone kept saying, why haven't you drawn or written a book? And I'm like, I don't know. Ask the universe because I keep trying. I'm like beating my head into the wall and no one will do it for me or with me. And so at the end of that year, the beginning of the year, I posted that illustration. At the very end of the year, I reposted the illustration along with all the things that had happened to me that year. And it was like, a big exhale had happened in my life during that year because I gave myself margin to rediscover my creative why, rediscover my family and my priorities. And a literary agent who had said no to me previously, I guess hadn't even seen that post, she said. And she said, my, it just popped into her head. And like 2 days later, I got an email from her. She goes, Stacy, you just keep coming into my mind. And I was scrolling through your Instagram feed from this illustration from January. And I feel like we should make a book together called Give Yourself Margin. And this is why. And I was like, did you see my post from a few days ago? She's like, no, you just popped into my head. And every time like I would think about you, I'd be like, man, there's something there with this illustrator. It just wasn't the right time. So we put this book proposal together and it went to auction and we sold it. And now I have this book out there and it's literally for the creative community to talk about, you know, rediscovering what it is that makes you light up inside as a creative. And so that book came out in August of 2020 and I'm really proud of it.
I'm so excited for you, Stacy. 2020 was such a big year for you in such weird circumstances too. You really took opportunities and like leaned into things that maybe probably felt uncomfortable. And yet here you are with a book and a whole educational program and everything. So thank you for taking that risk because you're helping and impacting so many in a positive way.
Well, thank you for saying that and for having me. 2020 was scary for so many of us, myself included. And sometimes so many things feel out of our control because they are out of our control. And so sometimes you just have to look down and see what you have right in front of you that you can use, what tools you have. And you have to dig really deep and be like, can I make something out of this where it feels like there's nothing? And I've been there so many times in my career, and sometimes something beautiful comes out of it. And so I, as hard as it was, I'm incredibly thankful for what I learned during 2020.
That's amazing. Well, thank you for all you've given us today. I will be sure to include all of your links in our show notes so people can find all the different things that you're doing and the resources you offer. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here, and have a great rest of your day.
Thank you. Well, that was a fun episode. Stacey is such a great storyteller. She provided such great information about her journey with licensing, as well as advice for those of you that are looking to get started. I think my favorite piece was when she said, there is more than one way forward as we build this business. That was so good and so true. You know, friends, you can build your business any way you like. You can say yes to opportunities, and you can say no to things. You can turn things down that don't feel right for you. If you are looking for support as you make these decisions and you want to connect with other product-based business owners, come join me in Proof to Product Labs. It is my 12-month group coaching program, and we have an incredible community of artists, designers, candle makers, textile designers, all of whom are leveraging different business models and growth strategies. To learn more, head to prooftoproduct.com/labs and join us. That is all I have for you today. Thank you so much for listening. I'll be back next week with a new episode. Thanks so much for spending time with us today. Head on over to prooftoproduct.com to join the conversation, access our show notes, and discover free resources to help you build your product-based business. We'll be back next week with a new episode. Thanks again.